Hello and welcome to Old Brother, a podcast about much-missed Manchester / Salford musical institution, The Fall. Each week, we invite along a guest to chat about their experiences and memories of the group. We, in this case, is me, Paul Hanley, and my brother Steve, who was a member of the group for nigh on 20 years. You can find us at play.acast.com/s/Old Brother on all good podcast outlets. Hope you enjoyed today's show. It's a belter. Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Old Brother, the Fall podcast with me, Paul Hanley, and my ever-so-talented brother, Stephen. Delighted with the guest we've got this evening. This is a real drummer for a change. This is Kieran Mellon, who was the who was the drummer in the Fall for, 14 years, I believe, was it, Kieran?
No, I'd love to claim that one. It was 11.
Oh, only 11 then. Oh,
yeah. Only 11? Yeah,
wasn't worth bothering with that, was it? I've been doing a bit of homework on you, Kieran, and I believe that you didn't really know who the Fall were, or you knew who they were. You didn't really know them, did you, before you joined? Is that right?
That's right, yeah. I knew Mr. Pharmacist and I sang the Fall song originally, is it?
No. So did you ever do Mr. Pharmacist with the Fall?
Sorry, what?
Did you ever do Mr. Pharmacist with the Fall?
Only every gig.
Every night.
I just missed that. I just missed Mr. Pharmacist. Just after once I went, they had to start doing cover versions. They didn't have enough songs after I left.
Once everybody had to run for the last train, that's when we used to play Mr. Pharmacist.
Right. So that was with Walter Mitty's Head, I believe, was the name of the band, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
How did you know that?
You know, there's this thing, they got this thing now called the internet. You can look things up. I also know your dad had a record shop. Is that right?
Yeah, he had a Planet Records in Cone. As far back as I can remember, I've always had my dad just feeding me different kinds of, you know. You started me off on blues, funnily enough.
Right.
So.
Not the Fall, then.
Blues stuff. Sorry?
Not the Fall.
No, not the Fall, no.
And I believe you started playing really young.
Yeah, but sort of about 5 or 6. I'm trying to teach my son now, he's 7. He's picking up quite well, actually, but, you know, like, obviously I weren't playing in bands at 5 and 6. just messing about at home, but, it's a weird one, because all my friends were into, like, do you know the music genre happy hardcore?
No. A bit old for happy hardcore, me, I think.
It's absolutely shockingly bad. It's it's sort of like a high-pitched vocal over, like, Wigan Pier dance music, like, really fast. While I were listening
I can't believe it never caught on.
Well, that was a big thing in Cone, where I'm from.
Right.
And so all my mates were listening to stuff like that, and I was listening to bloody Howling Wolf.
Yeah.
Wondering, I thought everybody else were weird, but they thought I was a strange one.
that's probably a good pedigree kind of thing for getting in the Fall, isn't it? Knowing all that stuff.
I don't know, you know. But I think I got in the Fall by Dave. You know, I didn't get picked out anything special. Dave suggested me, because I've been in bands with Dave for bloody, I don't know, 10 years before that. So, yeah, he just give me a go, really. That's how I got in it.
Right.
The Americans couldn't get over to Dusseldorf to do Imperial Wax Solvent, and I got the call.
Right, so did you start in the studio then, or did you do gigs before you started?
I've done 2 gigs. They were Orfeo McCord,
mm-hmm.
I think his last name was. He couldn't get over to Dublin. I think it was October. October 2006. So I met Mark at the airport. On the Wednesday, Dave gave me a CD and said, right, there's 12 songs there. Learn those. And then we've got a gig on Saturday. So I'm like, right, okay. And then I met Mark at the airport. And that's
wow.
And how many of them 12 songs were in the set?
Well, actually, all of them. And then
okay.
Yeah,
I have known it. The guitarist we had, Mark gave him a list of songs to learn. And then his first gig, there was only 4 of the list in this actual set on the night.
No, I think I got lucky there, really.
Yeah.
We did play one ever heard of, and I played it twice as speed because I had no idea what was going on, but Mark was pretty, he just said, oh, we're all right, it's fine, and we got off, so I got way lightly on that one, I think.
Yeah. You can't really have a go at you, though, can you? You've never heard it. I mean, blimey.
No. It was pretty good to me on that one, to be fair to him. Like, I've heard the stories on the way there, and he said, "Oh, watch this documentary, you know, the frightening, wonderful and frightening." Well, so I watched that to try and gauge sort of what he was like.
Yeah.
And he was nothing like that when I met him. We were absolutely like sweetheart, really.
I think he'd, I don't know which came first, but I think when he was working with you three and Elena, he was kind of different, wasn't he? I think he had more faith in you lot, I think.
Like I said, I was talking to you before about this. Like everybody, all the different lineups will have had different times with Mark.
And yeah.
I'd seen him, you know, when he were younger, I'm sure we were a bit more feisty in different ways than when he were older. I don't know, but our experience was all, I don't know. I didn't go in there thinking I was in the band, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That was my way of sort of working with Mark was, oh, I'm working for Mark in his band.
Yeah.
So I kind of went as a staff.
I think that's quite healthy.
Yeah.
That's quite a healthy way to do it, I think, isn't it? But I mean,
it was kind of like that for us, wasn't it? We knew the setup, and when we joined, we knew he was in charge, and we'd seen other people come and go.
But I mean, I think it becomes its own myth, doesn't it? I think, and that's what happened. Sort of night around the late 90s is that becomes the story about how horrible it is, and then that's the only thing that anyone ever asks you about. So then it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because it wasn't like that. It wasn't like, you hear people thinking it was like being in World War One, but I mean the only thing people ask you about is that, and if that's the only stories that get put out, then it sounds like it's that all the time, but it wasn't. I don't think.
I've seen him own a room
full
of like, it's amazing. Like the way he'd done it. We're in this room. He did something. I can't remember the band name. He did a thing with a lot. You've probably seen the clips actually on YouTube. But he goes into a studio with like all the heavy metal guys, and he was wearing a pink shirt. And they're all there with the tattoos and the, you know, the heavy metal tops and everything.
Yeah.
And they were silent while Mark were there. He just owned the room.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody did.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen a Hacienda dressing room of go completely silent when he walked in.
Just had a thing about him.
Oh, he did. Yeah, they're right presence, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he was always cool with us, you know.
Yeah.
He was more of a, like, he started off as, like, business. I was there to do a job, and then we became friends along the years, you know, and then... Yeah. He sort of like back then, he was more of a like a father figure to us in music. You know, I've got a dad, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
of course.
But
yeah.
Like, it's kind of that relationship more, because we're young compared to Mark. So he kind of treated us a bit differently, I think. Maybe that's the difference. You know, our age gap is quite a bit from me to Mark. So he's treats me, well, I was 23 when I joined the band.
Yeah.
So he treated me like a kid, I suppose.
It's funny that, because I always thought there was a big age gap between me and Mark. But when you look back, I was like 16 when I joined, and he was, what, 22? I mean, it's nothing, is it? But he was much more mature, I suppose, is probably the wrong word, but I always felt like a kid. He could buy and sell me, obviously. I mean, he didn't. I had that kind of relationship, I think, that I was an employee. Well, not an employee is probably not the right word, is it? I mean, it was a band, but it was that I was there to do what Mark wanted a drummer to do, which I think is quite a good way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's like we decided, as in like me, Dave and Pete, decided right from the outset that, you know, he comes over and faffs around with the, like, he'll pull the cymbals over, or like on these new kits, everything's attached to the bloody cymbal stand now.
Right.
So he pulls your cymbal, well, you listen, won't you? He pulls the stand over and your tom goes with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like, and he'll turn Pete up and down and Dave off and on and he'll shove
back. Did that not really bother you? Because I used to hate that, messing with the outs.
No, well, that's the thing. We decided right from the sort of word go on that one that it's Mark Shaw, and if he wants to sort of dismantle the stage, then we'll just keep going with what we've got left.
Yeah.
And it always worked out, you know, the on-stage mixing thing.
Yes.
Sometimes hit the nail on the head. Other times it were just like, you'd have
I used to think that I've just spent all afternoon sound checking and getting this thing right and getting it to sound good. And he's just come along and destroyed it in a matter of a second. Why did I bother?
It's a different kind of good.
Well, yeah.
Different kind of good.
We've done it where we've sound checked and got it sounding really great. And everything sounded good on stage. And then Mark would turn up at the venue and you're like, oh, no, he's here. Because like, he started hanging back at the, you know, letting us go and do it.
Yeah.
But every time he turned up, he'd come in and he'd always say that he'd always be the same thing. He'd come in and just go, Kieran, can you just move the drum kit 2 foot to the left?
I was just going to say that, yeah. Can you just move that drum kit 2 foot to the left?
Would it not have been easier for him to stand 2 feet to the right rather than move the drum kit?
So I used to do it. I just change it.
Yeah.
We did one show in Newcastle. I can't remember. It's like some one of one-day festival things. And Mark had decided, he's like, come on, let's just let them have it now. And we're like, the drums aren't set up. He's like, Bill, right, we'll just do it. So like, we basically walked out on stage and I was dragging the toms and everything and the you know, the bass drum. It's like throwing it up while Pete's doing an intro. And like, but it turned out to be a really good gig just because it's so ramshackle. Proper punky style, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Going for it. Yeah.
Speaking of going for it, I've been watching it quite a bit, but the thing with you with the two drummers is just fantastic. Because I was the two drummers for some of the time I was in there. So did you like being part of a two drummer?
Well, it was just different. The actual first time I did it was on my second gig with Orfeo.
Yeah.
It was the Boddington's beer, you know, the brewery.
Yeah.
They turned it into a venue until it closed. Well, I'd done that one gig in Ireland, and then he said, oh, can you get to this one? I think it was November or December. So I turned up thinking, brilliant, like, you know, I've got another gig. And the Orfeo were there. So I said, oh, fair enough, you know, I don't want to step on your toes. And he said, oh, no, we're having two drummers tonight. I'm like, all right, thinking we'll take turns or yeah. It's a bit weird. Anyway, I got there, there were two kits set up, and I was like, all right.
It's great, though, isn't it?
So it's a two... Yeah, I had a bit of an understanding with Darren.
Yeah.
Because it was clashing, both of us having cymbals and both of us having two, you know.
Yeah.
So he played a stand-up kit.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it was something quite cool about it.
I loved it. Because it's funny because me and Carl did it, Carl Burns, but then Mark tried to bring it in with Simon, who was the drummer after me. Well, it went a bit weird. It went me, Carl, me back for a bit, and then Simon. But he hated it, two drummers. He fought it tooth and nail, didn't he, Simon?
Oh, no, he didn't like it at all, yeah.
I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was... And I watched... There's a film of you doing the... Is it Six Music? And you do... Wolf Kiddulk Man with the two drums. It's just brilliant. I mean, it's... Because I've been doing my homework and I didn't realise just quite how hard you hit the kit, which is always gratifying. Because you don't want one of these bloody tippy-tappy drummers, do you? you're definitely not that.
I got sort of drummed into me, pardon the pun.
Hey.
when I was 16, I started doing some... Have you heard of Azizi Brown?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
When I was 16, I got a job drumming with him,
right,
like, on a few gigs and stuff. It's a bit of a weird story. I was setting up drum teching for this band that was supporting Status Quo. So I was like seeing like how it's done from the other side.
Yeah.
And just like the big sort of like, we had chefs and everything. It's like, bloody hell, what's going on here? So I ended up buying the Status Quo drum kit off their drum tech.
Wow.
Because we swap them out every 5 years. He said, oh, if 500 quid, you can have it.
Blimey.
And my mum just coughed up some money so I could get a kit so I could play with the Z's.
Right.
With a decent kit instead of what I already had.
Right.
So when I started rehearsing with Aziz, and he's one of the things he said to me is just like, all you have to do is just hit it hard, hit it with like conviction. And I don't know, it just stuck. And
yeah.
I sort of took out the, I don't know if I'm tense or anything, I get on stage and I sort of lose my, what I'm You know, I've not got the nice light and shade what everybody else has got. It just comes out.
Well, it's really, you can really see that. I was going to say that with all four of you. Nobody's coasted along there, are they? It's not like you're saying you're like an employee, but it's not like a session musician. That's the big thing.
I felt part of the band. Like, especially at the end, after maybe a couple of years, I felt like I was in it with him. It was like a, I felt like we're in a gang almost together.
And there was no atmosphere of that might change or he might get rid of somebody or any of that.
I used to be quite annoyed by the revolving door comments,
I
was expecting someone to be sacked all the time, because I think more people probably, I might be totally out here, but I'm assuming more people left than were sacked.
And Steve always has this theory, which he'll expound on, that a lot of the people, and when they talk about these ridiculous number of members, a lot of them weren't really properly members, were they?
Weren't members, no.
Yeah, it's like, what is it, 40 odd or 60 or something.
Yeah, but if you get somebody in to play clarinet on a tour or violin on a tour, well, they weren't really a member of the band.
No, you can't, exactly. It's like a stand-in for it.
And like I say, I think it's not like, that's what I never really like about that Granny on Bongos thing. It's not that people are just turning up and tossing it off. People who play with the Fall really mean it and they commit to it, don't they?
Oh, yeah, you have to be in it, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm trying to explain this to Sam, our singer now in Imperial Wax. Obviously, he's a young lad. What is he? He's young. He's coming up 30. He's 20 odd.
That's young.
He's always asking me about, bits and stuff. And I was just saying, you're in it or you're out. And you've got to be fully...
Yeah.
if you're in it.
Involved.
You sort of have Mark's back. And I don't know, it's just one of the things.
Definitely, yeah.
It is like being in a gang almost. You have to, once you're out, you're out. Once you're in, you've got to be full in.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you're right about more people left than were sacked. There's that many people who actually were sacked. I mean, Carl bumps the average up because he got sacked about four times, didn't he? But I think most people, certainly me and Steve, both left. Steve went back, obviously, and then left again. But I don't know. I mean...
I was sacked a few times as well.
the one that didn't
that
he sack,
usually lasted
sack.
About a week.
Yeah, which one was that? Was that when Craig went?
Yeah, I was sacked then.
Any other time? Any other sackings you'd like to tell us about?
Yeah, I was sacked when somebody had seen me in the pub with Mark Riley.
Oh, well. No wonder. Fair enough.
And somebody had seen me in the pub with Mark and reported it back, and I got sacked that day.
That can't have lasted very long, can it?
How long did it last?
I got sacked on the Saturday and went back on the Thursday after.
Too bad, then.
Not too bad.
They recorded two singles and an album while he was gone.
What's that?
They recorded two singles and an album while you were gone.
They did a tour and an album.
So, which do you prefer then, recording or playing live?
I like them both, probably equally. I love playing live. It's brilliant. I just love making new music as well.
They've both got the different things that are great.
It's like making a cake. You get in there and you're not sure what it... I mean, the way we recorded, I don't know how you lot did it, but we didn't have anything when we went in the studio. We're going with nothing and sort of work on a few riffs and then just... We all blended our ideas together.
We didn't do that. The albums, we'd go in with about probably... 7 finished songs.
Oh, okay.
And then we'd probably work on about 3 or 4 in the studio. A lot of them were ready to go. And
about how long did it take you to do an album then, Kieran? Was it fairly quick turnaround, I imagine, was it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the last one. I think you put us in this. What were we now? I bet we did, when you say quick turnaround for studio time, it was probably about 2 to 3 weeks overall.
Well, that's pretty quick.
Well, that is pretty quick.
Yeah, that's without. We had to write them as well, so we kind of.
That is really quick, then.
But then these other albums, like Ersatz. Yeah. I mean, that is probably one of the, you know, that's up there with the worst, one of the worst rated Fall albums. And if you'd have heard the actual album that we did,
yeah,
it's completely different to that. So we were really
chuffed. Yeah, well, we were talking to, you know, Grant Showbiz.
I love Grant.
Recently, and he said that he said there's a lot of them that were sort of recorded and the original recordings were better than it turned out, that the albums turned out.
Yeah, well, Ersatz, we got given, Mark just said, right, be at the airport on this day, you're going to Berlin. So we're like, oh, right, okay. Anyway, we got there, got the tickets, flew there, got off the plane. We're like, where, who's picking us up? What's going on? So I rang Mark, and he's like, all right, I thought you'd just find somewhere to stay.
Like, oh, no. So we ended up... When I said Berlin, I meant Burnley.
So we ended up sleeping in Safi's bar. I don't know if you know who Safi is. Safi Sniper. He's one of Eleanor's best friends.
Yeah.
So he
used to do like a support slot sort of thing, didn't he?
Yeah, like a VJ thing before we went up. Anyway, he came and saved us, and we slept upstairs in his. He had a bar, and then he had a little flat upstairs that he didn't use, so we kicked on the floor in that.
Hey, the luxury,
the glamour.
Oh, nothing but the best. But we got put in a really nice studio. The name completely escapes me, but it was all like wood panelled, but really nice. And instead of, like, you know, they normally put the bass, like, in a different room and everything. They split you all out. Well, this place was, like, positioning. It was all about how you were positioned in a room.
Right.
So you were playing together as a band properly.
That's
we got
great.
A really nice sound going.
Yeah.
And we wrote and recorded 12 songs in 2 days.
Blimey.
And we're just like, some of these are, like, because we were just there. We weren't doing anything else. We were not, like, nipping off to the pub. It was just like, right, we're in. And we're doing it.
Yeah.
So we blasted a lot out, and we came away really chuffed with ourselves, thinking, you know,
yeah,
sounding really good. I think Mark's going to like them, and I think one.
So it's just the musicians in the studio, yeah.
Yeah, it was just me. Well, me, Dave, and Pete. We'd come away thinking brilliant, and then he'll put us in somewhere else to, you know, do Mark's parts and Eleanor's bits and everything. I think one thing got used off that.
Oh, bloody hell.
And it speeded up slightly than it actually were recorded.
Right.
The rest of it's all just, yeah, I don't really know. I can't remember recording most of that.
Right.
All the stuff. So it's just one of them things. It's like, could it...
Yeah, we had a similar thing when we were doing Code Selfish. We had a studio in Glasgow for a month and spent ages, like, working on stuff. And when we came out at the end of the month, he didn't like any of it, and we ended up re-recording it all in, like, 3 days somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that whole month was just wasted. So, you know, we just ditched a lot of it.
There's a big difference between wasting a day, 2 days in the studio where you're all in the same room, and a month in a big posh studio where you were. It must have cost a fortune.
Well, it had a snooker table.
Oh, yeah.
A snooker table.
I bet you spent about 3 hours a day recording in there, if that.
We did.
So which do you think's the best album you played on, then?
Personally, my favourite one's the last one, but
is
I
it?
Know that's... not out of... I don't know, I just... I got to produce it.
You were involved in the production.
Yeah, that last one was, like, you know, personally, it's my favourite because I got the most control on it.
But right.
Mark was quite ill by then.
Yeah.
He was still going. We thought he wanted... You know, I believed they were going to get better.
Yeah.
So I always thought we'd do another one after that. So that's... We didn't write it as going, this is the last thing that he'll ever do. This, it was like, we already talked about hiring a big... He wanted to... The idea were to go with Grant Showbiz up to the... I think it was up to in the lake somewhere and hire this big house cottage thing.
Right.
Set up a studio in it, do like a month up there on the next big album after this. So that was the idea, but I don't know if he just sort of I don't know if he knew he were worse than he were, or if he just put that in his head so he had a goal to get.
Well, because we talked to Grant and he said the same. He said he definitely had plans to for the next one. He was, you know, they weren't just like, let's do this. He had sort of concrete plans to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I were ready to go. We were just waiting for him to get the, you know, chemo. Yeah. Make him feel a bit better and everything. But, you know, he did have cancer in 2012. Yeah, he got I think it was a tumour or something. And he went and had it sorted out. And he were on, honestly, he were back 2 days later in the studio with us recording Your Future, Our Clutter. And and then we were doing gigs and he's on stage in a wheelchair because he broke his hip while they were there in the hospital. He's a tough fella, like. You know?
Oh, aye.
Yeah.
No one was going to stop him, were they? No one was telling him.
We asked him not to do it. We said, like, you know, please don't, we don't, you know, don't do this for us or anything. We didn't know why we're doing it because we're like, you're not well, like.
Yeah.
Obviously, because he wanted to go out and do what he does.
Yeah.
The last one where he couldn't make it, that was pretty grim, really. We got back to
Bristol.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We were supposed to do Coco the day after, and we just drove home. But when we got back, I got him back to his house, and I had to carry him in. Just really horrible,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, some of that film of him, you're like, he's going on stage in the wheelchair. Christ almighty. But I mean, his singing's not like, he doesn't sound, he sounds still belting him out, isn't he?
Even that 100 Club thing where he got, the reason why he went off stage and we carried on is just they were too ill to stand anymore, really. So he went and sat down in the dressing room, but he had the portable mic.
Yeah.
And he carried on, cracked it out. I went back after the show, but into the dressing room. It's like, you'll have played 100 Club, that tiny dressing room.
Yeah. Tiny, yeah.
So when he's there, we're boiling, absolutely roasting, there's no air flow or anything, and he's just done a full set, sat in there on his own.
Yeah.
Fair play to him.
Oh, aye, yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
Dead right. I mean, it literally wasn't good for him, was it? But it was what he wanted to do.
I don't know. There's something about his character, and I can't imagine him ever just going, right, that's it, I'm ill. I'm going to stay home now, and that's me. And, you know, I think he were always going to be hard work.
Yeah.
he's going to, it's like, oh, I'm supposed to do that. Okay, well, I'm going to go in the opposite way and go and do a lot of gigs.
Yeah.
It must have been quite hard for you guys at the end, though, man.
Yeah, I mean, I went and visited him and stuff over the Christmas time thing. It's just horrible, like, honestly. Because his face went swollen and stuff, and then he lost more weight, and it was just horrible.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I was when I was going through and looking at the stuff, I was deliberately kind of trying to shy away from the stuff at the end, not because it's just.
Yeah.
It kind of tilts the story, doesn't it, really? Because if you look at your U3 or U4 lineup, it's a real, like, triumph, isn't it? It's like he gets it all back and gets it all fantastic and got a really good band behind him. And, I mean, I'm not saying that it's not important, the bit at the end, but you don't want that to be the story, do you?
I'd still be doing it now. There's no way I'm going to leave the band. I were a lifer, you know. So I just got used to it. It's just how it were a way of life for me. And even, like, my wife had to get used to me being back.
Yeah.
You know, it's been tough for us all.
Yeah. Because how much realistically of your life did it take up then? Not towards the end, but when, you know, the last sort of run of years, was it a full-time thing?
Yeah, I had to do bits of stuff to make it a proper wage, you know. Yeah. I couldn't rely on it as a full-time job. But I had a recording studio as well. So when I were back, I used to do that. And then, you know, I was like a full-time musician at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, when Mark died, I went back to welding and painting and decorating all sorts.
Right, yeah.
And what about Imperial Wax? What's the future?
Oh, we're just on with the next album now.
Great.
Right.
Yeah, it's all positive stuff. I don't know, we've kind of gone a bit faster and a bit more punkier on this next one.
Yeah.
So I mean, we've got a good promoter. You probably know him, actually, Jacob Brailsford. Young lad from Manchester.
Right.
Well, he's not that young anymore, but...
You keep saying that.
He's
young.
He's younger than me, anyway. But he's done some cool stuff, like he's done put John Cooper Clark on and stuff like that. And,
right.
You know, he's cool. So run with him, and we're just weighing up our options with a couple of labels at the minute for the next one.
Cool.
So yeah, it's good.
So how does it compare then? What's it? Is it a different experience playing live with? Because I mean, it's the same band, isn't it? Pretty much, apart from the singer, obviously.
Yeah, it's different. It's
does he mess with the amplifiers?
Oh, he wouldn't dare.
There's only one person you'd let do that. Yeah. I had a similar thing when we left the Four, when I was playing with Tom Hingley from the Inspirals. There's only one person I'm going to let mess with my amplifier.
It's not you.
And it's not you.
There was a bit more to that. It was, and it's certainly not a something like you. It was, but no, we can't put that word on the podcast, can we? He never did it again, did he?
I don't know how you did. You ever get like play a certain way when you were in the Fall, or did you always play? Because I adjusted my playing to how to be in the Fall.
Well, I was sort of the first. It was my first drumming gig, really. The Fall. I was 16, so I played.
All right.
I'd only played one gig before I joined. I did a gig at a youth club, doing like Buzzcocks covers and stuff. I did that gig, and then that was probably in the January, maybe 1980, and then I joined the Fall in the March. So that was the second gig I ever did. So I'd never been anything but the Fall drummer, really. Yeah. I mean, I suppose I did change it a bit after I left, but I don't know enough to play in different styles in different bands. I'm not
really I think I only know one way of playing. Yeah,
it's bizarre because I've done all sorts of different things in the past. You know, before this, like a rockabilly band, I've been in like straight up sort of punky rock. You know, I've done a few different kind of styles.
Yeah.
Before Paul, like Aziz again, that he's completely different.
I saw him, and the rhythms he plays are totally different, aren't they?
Yeah, and you've got to play to his like delays and stuff like that.
Right.
That he's so it's a bit that would another lesson trying. It's like learning how to play to a click.
Yeah.
Learning how to play to a delay. So, but yeah, when I got in the Fall, I was just busy, doing film stuff, and he just a couple of gigs. He like took me to one side after the gig. He's like, you don't need to do fills. And I'm like, all right.
Too many rolls.
And then I said, right, fair enough. And I just sort of, I saw it as a passing comment and then said it again. And I thought, oh, I'll do less fills this time. And then, I don't know, I can't remember the gig now, but it might have been Glasgow Ferry. I can't remember, but that's the top gig there. I did the gig and I thought, right, I'm going to do no fills this gig. And I came off, and he's like, that was fucking brilliant.
Brilliant.
I'm like, oh, right, okay. Penny drops.
One thing I didn't want to ask you, how do you account for, and this might sound a bit daft, that the Fall always sound like the Fall, given that you didn't know anything about the Fall? You can definitely hear a sort of musical kind of link, can't you, all the way through?
Well, that is a funny one because I purposely didn't listen to any Fall when I was out from getting in the Fall to the end.
Right.
For 11 years because I didn't want to be influenced by, like, I didn't want to write a song like what you
do.
You know, I didn't want to, because I wanted it to be something new, always moving on and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I stayed clear from listening to any other Fall up until, like, saying, can you do Carry Bag Man? Or, like, live, we had to play. Like, or Chuck Hill Cook, a different, I don't know what, name the song.
No Christmas. You did a great version of No Christmas.
Yeah, we did that.
Hey, that.
Really fast and drunk, but, yeah. I don't know, really. I think it must be the fact that you go for the repetitive hook thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And cut out the fills. So, and then it's Mark's vocal, isn't it?
Yeah.
As soon as you put Mark, it just sounds like the Fall.
It does, yeah. I mean, I have to say, some great little great riffs on some of the stuff you're on. You know, you get that riff and you can just think, they can do anything with this riff. They can take it up, they can take it down, they can play it longer, shorter. You know, when you get them really good, that's a real Fall thing, that, isn't it? That's what, you know, Steve's always said that before.
Well, like, I'm into James Brown, and I love the sort of, that's kind of what I saw Mark as, but like, you know, a post-punk version of it.
Yeah.
And he commands the band, and
he didn't fine you for doing roles, did he?
And you'd be surprised. No. I'd watch his hands and stuff.
Yeah.
Because he'd always like give me a little cues with his hands, or turn around and nod at me for a certain bit, and I knew what it meant, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Oh, man, that's great. Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing like that, is there, when you get a, you know, you're on stage and you're playing something, and it's just the performance, isn't it? It's not even really properly a song half the time. It's like a riff that can go up and down, and you just sort of get in the zone. It's a fantastic thing to be a part of, isn't it?
Yeah, well, sometimes, you know, we might have all had a Red Bull, let's say. And then, so, everything would be wanting to go faster.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, fucking hell, like, I am sweating now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm trying to cling on for dear life.
Yeah.
And Mark will turn around and he'll be like, come on. You want it to be faster. I'm just like, I can't. I'm clinging on. But I don't know, you get through the pain barrier.
Yeah, you do, yeah. You
smell your own muscles burning.
I remember he said that to me once. We did three nights at the Band on the Wall, and he was like, come on, Paul, you're a young kid, I'm an old man, you should be able to keep. And I'm thinking, you're only bloody stuck there. I'm whacking Seven Shades of Shite on all this kit, eh? And having said that, when he said he was an old man, he was about, like I say, he was about 23.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
He was 49 when I met him.
Yeah.
So, which is bizarre, because I was 23 and I thought, he's really old. You know, when I got in the van, I just saw him as like a really old man because I was a kid.
Yeah.
And now Pete's not so far off, you know.
Yeah.
In his late 40s now. And I'm thinking, you're not, I don't know.
He doesn't seem that bad now. No, he had a kind of different air about him, Martin, didn't he? He always felt like sort of, well, I always felt like I was in the room with your teacher, you know, that kind of vibe. I mean, even though the age gap wasn't that much, that's what it kind of felt like.
Yeah. Well, whatever room he was in, he'd control it.
Yeah.
Even like hotel rooms, like out in the, I mean, for us, in the best way, but he were in control.
Yeah.
We'd go back to our hotel room after a gig, and he'd have me creased, and I'm talking belly laughing every night. Like, just funny, but he would not stop talking.
Yeah.
So you couldn't get a word in, really.
Yeah, it was, we're talking about that with Grant, and he was saying, because of all the weight was on him, in the, you know, I know it's a band, but everyone was looking at him, that the relief he had when he got back in that hotel room after the gig, he kind of really relaxed, and I think he really enjoyed them with you lot, you know.
Oh yeah, they were the best times. I know you're supposed to say whatever gig was the best thing ever, but the hotel room were the best part of it for me, because you're just having a laugh with him, and honestly, I'm not saying it just to be like, oh
yeah.
I mean, we were creased over, he was piss funny.
Yeah, he was.
You can't repeat much of the stuff.
I'm kind of relieved, I think, the fact that you're talking to us here now, is that because I always had this thing that he'd be sat in a hotel room with you, slagging us off, slagging all the ex members off.
Oh, naturally.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But I mean, as long as he did it. As long as he did it in a funny way, that's all right.
The enemy.
Yeah.
The enemy.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
No, we just had a laugh, really. Played music and just had fun.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so I mean, that's really a sort of healthy place it got to, the Fall, I think, didn't it? I think it got a bit toxic towards the end of Steve's time. We've talked about this, me and Steve, and we wouldn't have given you tuppence for when Steve left. Not necessarily because Steve left. I mean, although it was a big part of it, I thought they were finished then in 98. And you've got to say, the way he turned it round, because, I mean, it happened again, didn't it? It happened with Steve Trafford's lot. They all buggered off as well.
Yeah, Yeah, did he leave him in the desert? He mentioned that a few times.
I mean, to be fair to Steve, there are two sides to every story.
Well, that's where the American group came
from. I didn't leave him in a desert.
No. Prison, wasn't it? I only left him in prison. 3 meals a day. So, yeah, but, I mean, the way that he came back is just... It's amazing, really. It's a hell of a story. Which
Imperial Wax was... I didn't know what to expect. Like I said, I didn't listen to any of the old stuff. And I was going in to this place thinking... Like, this guy, you know, he's the guy, he's the famous guy, and we're just there to do the job. But because we've gone over to Dusseldorf, obviously the beer, you don't get hangover off it, do you?
So no.
You can keep going.
Yeah.
And we just ended up having a right good time making it as well. And I was going out to the pub with Mark and then going back, and we're just in this Andy Thomas studio from Mouse on Mars.
Oh yeah,
we're in Von Tudorhead as well with Mark.
Yeah,
that we recorded at his place. But when I say house, it's like a big sort of warehousey, you know, them German places you go that are like industrial.
Yes,
got like a little flat in there and a massive studio, and it's really, really nice place. But he looked after us, and his girlfriend was feeding us and stuff. And
yeah.
I don't know, it was great, relaxed atmosphere, and we kind of had fun making it. And I think, I don't know, you can hear it a bit. It went to, I think it was 35 or 34 in the chart
right
when it came out. And I remember Mark being like, bloody hell. And I was surprised that he was surprised.
Right.
And I thought that's what it'd do for him, had it? Because it's Mark, you know, he's the guy.
Yeah.
So, and then I was like, oh, hang on, I think... with it, something a bit special on that one.
Yeah.
So there was, you know, I don't know.
No, it definitely did. And you didn't struggle to repeat it, did you? Because, I mean, another cliche is that the way Mark kept it fresh was every now and again he'd swap things around a bit. I mean, that's what, you know, that's... But you didn't need that to happen, did you, I don't think, you lot?
No, well, the next album was Your Future. And I think that might be the most popular one that we've done as our lineup.
Yeah.
That were out on Domino. And they were... See, that were a different experience because we'd gone into Castleford to record in a couple of places. I think we've been to Liverpool, you know, the Park Street place.
Yeah.
Been there. A couple of different places anyway. And they had their guys in from the studio. From the label, sorry.
Yeah.
Working on. And he felt a bit restricted in how we were working because it... had to be a certain spec and be run past the label before it can go out.
Oh, wow, I bet he didn't like that.
So, and then we went on Cherry Red and he got free reign then.
Yeah.
So, got to do whatever he wanted.
God, it worked, didn't it? One thing I was going to ask you about was that horrific attack you suffered in 2018.
You got attacked on a train, didn't you?
Yeah, we're coming home after Sad Lads do with Mark.
Right.
No, did you ever do Sad?
Steve did. I never got invited on the Christmas do. Too young.
Well, it were
was it a Christmas do?
It was a Christmas do, but because you were ill, it got moved on. So I think it was March by the time we did it. Anyway, we've been out and stuff in Manchester, and then I got on the train back to Burnley, and there were two lads just picking on a little dude. He was only about 15, and he was sat there with his bike, and I was sat there and watching it for a bit, and they kept grabbing hold of his bike and trying to pull it and stuff. So I ended up losing my temper, and I just stood up and told him to go and sit down a bit, you know, abruptly. Like, you know how it goes.
Yeah.
And they went off. They went and sat down in a different carriage, and I sat down. I put my headphones in, and I fell asleep.
Yeah.
And that was the last thing that I can remember.
Oh, so Christ.
I woke up in hospital on the bed.
Bloody hell.
So,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it's not... Apparently, they like, kicked me in the head while I was asleep and then stamped on my head loads and stuff.
Jesus Christ, they could have killed you.
Yeah, well, they thought they had killed me. That was the thing.
Oh,
God. They were heard in a pub. They'd, like, you know, when they'd follow him through on the CCTV stuff. There were witnesses in this pub that had heard him saying, oh, we've killed him. So they thought they got away with it. And
Jeez.
He was pretty bad, to be fair.
Yeah.
In hospital for a week. But, you know, but he's knackered my memory and recalling names and stuff like that. He's getting better.
Yeah.
And hopefully he'll recover, you know. But everyone were cool. And everyone on, you know, the Mighty Folk page and all that lot on Facebook. I got tons of people from the, you know, the fall online.
Oh, yeah,
lots of people send messages and get well soon and all that stuff. Yeah, fair play to them.
Bloody hell. Fair play to you, Christ. Was the lad? Was the lad all right? Did he get?
Yeah, he got away nice.
Oh man!
Around with his bike anyway. So, but they ended up they handed themselves in because they saw themselves in paper. They were supposed to go down for it started off as attempted murder, and it went down to GBH with intent, and then it went down again because the CPS kept putting it back, and it got down to. I think they ended up getting ABH with intent and they're out in a year or something.
Cool.
So, yeah. It is what it is, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm moved on from it now. So.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. No, I mean, you could be very bitter about things like that, couldn't you?
Well, you could.
You know, I started off and I was really angry about it all, and then I kind of, my wife, she said, you just leave it now.
Yeah.
There's no point. Keep thinking about it, so I'm that's it. I'm done with it.
Right, it's good gone. For you. Right, well, on that bombshell, Kieran, we'll have to let you go. It's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you.
Absolute delight, man, talking to you.
No, don't be daft, no.
Man,
no, I mean, you know, we've all done it, haven't we? So there you go. But honestly, great to speak to you, and take care. And I hope Imperial Wax does well. Hope you get out playing again soon.
Nice.
I love the fact that you just carried on with it and made it work.
Great. Well, we'll come and see you when you play, man.
Good luck to you too.
All right. Cheers, mate. Good night. God bless. Good to see you.
We've got to have a pint sometime.
I think that could be arranged. I think, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to end every week of the podcast with, we'll have to have a pint sometime.
Yeah.
Good call, Austin.
Yeah. All right, mate. Take care. Good to see you, mate.
Take care.
Ta-ra.
Lads.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for joining us for episode 3 of Old Brother. Episodes released every second Wednesday, so watch out for episode 4. You can follow us on Twitter at Old Brother Show, where you can subscribe via iTunes or link to Spotify. Feel free to rate us on iTunes if you're of a mind. See you back here in a fortnight, and remember, if you're driving, take your car.